to Backlog Dialogues, the podcast that digs you out of your backlog before it buries you. I'm John, and joining me as always are my two friends who keep giving me this eerie glass-eyed stare.
Hello, John.
Hello, John. Are you ready to find out more about Hinamizawa, John?
John? John, have you been good, John?
Are you lying to us, John?
I need you both John. To tell me your name. Please, just tell John, me your names. Tell me your names, please.
You know our names, John. Why do you...
tell us your names!
You don't.
Just tell me your names already!
What's in the box?
You know that I'm Matt, John.
You're lying, John.
And I guess I have to introduce our good friend Jared as well.
Yeah, you probably do.
Whoa, did I go somewhere just now?
That was weird. That was wild. Why did you guys do that to me?
Why wouldn't I?
Yes.
So today we are going into chapters 7 through 9 of Onikakushi.
And this is where everything really starts to go to hell.
Or you might say it starts getting a whole lot less cute.
Yes.
The demons are approaching.
Oh no, you can't do
that. You know,
we can't make that reference yet, Jared.
But you know, we start off, it's a completely normal day.
Yep, it's the day after Watanagashi, everything's fine, it's time for club. Before we get to that, though, the teacher tells everyone, okay, look, I know stuff happens every year. Don't tell reporters anything weird.
She's actually more circumspect. She says, every year is probably going to be reporters and magazines. You don't want to get caught say anything silly or be taken the wrong way.
Yeah. Just don't talk shit at all, please. I beg of you. Not this year.
And Cage is like, oh, I know what they're talking about now. I truly feel like I belong because I'm part of this cover-up.
I'm just imagining, Keiji has no self-awareness here, but I'm just imagining the teacher looking straight at Keiji. That means no telling stranger photographers that Rena would be the one to kill him in this town.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's like, oh, right. You should have told me that last week before I kept telling that reporter about the murders. That photographer.
We have a lot of summary here. A lot happens in this episode, so the summary is going to be a bit more dense.
So they go into a very simple game. They don't name it, but it's clearly Clue or Cluedo for if you're in Europe. They don't lay out a board or anything. They don't have the original characters. They just all pick up the suspect and evidence cards and put one away, and they just try to guess based on it.
Really, it's a better version of Clue because you don't have to do the random going around the board.
they actually have a different way to gather information. So basically they have, we'll talk about it later. But
no, it's about the same. In Clue, you would make accusations when you go to a room and you have to use that room as part of your accusation.
Gotcha.
This penalty game is also pretty basic. It's just you have to be a gopher for the winner. We can talk about this more a bit later. The key point of this, it does not go well for either Keiichi or Rena.
Like, they're both at zero. In fact, eventually Keiichi just gets Rena and Miyam in the hallway, so they're both going to go to the bathroom and talk.
Yeah, well, he gets up to go to the bathroom, clearly, hinting to Rena, hey, come with me. We need to plan this out. Rena follows.
And basically, I don't think Miyam says anything dirty about that.
Oh, no. But granted, we don't get to see her reaction.
I'm sure Miyam knows something's up.
To clarify, Mion says, be sure to squeeze out a nice one. So
true. Yeah.
She decided to go with the poop joke.
Yeah. So Keiichi and Rena make a plan out in the hallway. Keiichi sends Rena back ahead so that they don't ask questions. Smart move, Keiichi. You're learning.
They're essentially just going to collude and share information.
Yeah, basically. But before Keiichi can go and rejoin the club, the teacher pulls him aside and tells him that someone is here for him.
With unnecessary remake sprites.
Yeah, if you're playing in the remake, this will be the first time you get to see Chie-sensei.
Both here and just a second earlier when she was talking about don't talk to the press.
She does not have a sprite in the original sprites.
And no one refers to her by name. So except for the fact they labeled her dialogue in this, it would just be the teacher up now. So it's a bit odd.
Yeah. So Keiichi goes out to the courtyard and he meets a heavyset man who invites him to talk inside of his car, notifying him, it's a bit hot outside. I have air conditioning in my car.
Yeah. I'm wearing a black shirt. Why did I do that? Anyways, get in my car, young boy.
He is the skeeviest man there is in Hinamizawa.
We can talk a little bit more about him and his sprites and all that later, but just in the car, the old man reveals himself to be a cop.
The funny thing is he doesn't say it directly. Cage is like, oh, this is a cop and I'm kind of being interrogated.
Or a detective.
Yeah, really. Keiichi figures that he's a cop for a long time, but he doesn't actually come out and reveal that he's actually a cop until nearly the end.
Yeah, yeah, when he gives him his card. But
yeah,
the key point of it is he is questioning Keiichi, asking if he's seen Tomitake.
And the funny thing is that Keiichi doesn't actually recognize it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Because it looks very lifeless. He's looking at a picture of a corpse from a morgue.
The reason why Oishi is talking to us is he saw that there are scribbles on his shirt from him and his friends, which were, of course, all those friendly messages our friends left on his shirt last night. So, obviously, there might be one of the last people to see him. Go find this kid.
I mean, theoretically, very few murderers autograph their victims.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
should check.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it is a lead to go on. That makes sense.
Well, the biggest suspects are always the people who you know saw the victim last. So,
I mean, they're the most important people to ask is probably the best way to put it.
They're the immediate people of interest. Suspect at least needs a little more. I mean, it's a little, it would be jumping to conclusion.
They're at least the first people to talk to is what I mean.
So,
oh, yes.
The key point we get here is that, yes, Tomitake has died. Oh, no. But the way he's died is particularly horrific as well.
The key takeaway is that he tore out his own throat with his fingernails.
Yeah. You describe it like he scratched right through, I believe I said. Like, he, like, this man is clawing and clawing.
He also notes that Tomitake was attacked, so this wasn't just like a very weird freak suicide. Like, he had a board as a weapon. He was covered in bruises, so he was apparently fighting back against something.
Actually, you can see where the board was slammed against the trees, the guardrails. There was clearly, except his blood was everywhere.
Yeah, but the cause of death was not the assault. The cause of death was the fingernails at his own throat.
Yep.
It was Tomitake with the fingernails at the highway.
Oh, no, no.
Did I win?
No.
Yeah, they found him at the road between Kinamizawa and Okinomiya.
Yeah.
Specifically right where the paved road becomes a dirt road.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very small town, so not much of it is paved at all.
Yeah. Then the cop suggests that the murder was either a continuation of the village curse or, in more likely his view, a conspiracy within the village that he is trying to get to the heart of.
Oh, it's also something that the woman with Tomitake has vanished.
He doesn't reveal that until later, right?
Actually, no. It's right after he talks about the clawing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Keiichi immediately asks about her. Yeah, like our new friend comes up with theories about how the curse could be involved or just the village being upset. Like, apparently photography is a no-no, but they probably should post that at the festival walls if that's the case.
This cop does a lot of work to try to manipulate Keiichi to be on his side, try to get him to trust him.
Specifically, what he does is he tells him to not talk to his friends about this conversation, particularly Mion and Rika, because of their family names, the Sonozakis and the Furudes.
And this one's nasty. Like, we've kind of been glossing over how he's been talking to what he's been talking. He's kind of just impressing Keiichi, like, this is secret. This is important. By the way, I don't want to say anything bad about your friends, but why do you mention my friends? Oh, it's because they're probably bad. It's almost that blatant. Like, he says, don't mention them, but I don't want to talk about them, badmouth them. And then Keiichi pushes, like, well, I think there's a conspiracy.
He comes away thinking that, you know, he doesn't really truly suspect anyone yet. Everything Oishi has said makes the entire village sound suspicious.
Yep.
Yeah, like, I noticed a section where we'll talk about more, because I really want to talk about his insinuations and this and the other conversations he has throughout this.
Yep.
I'm going to save that for the cop tactics section we brought in. What a great section.
Keiichi returns to class just in time for Rena to win a hand at the game.
Actually, you know, Rena loses it because she's at minus one after this.
Well, no. She still wins a hand, but she also had lost some beforehand.
No.
Because this one. It's Mi-chan with the rope in the lounge. Nope.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She wins after the episode fades the montage.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And so basically she wins with the plan that Keiichi and Rena came up with by colluding, but then they're both tied and they both have to do it together.
Yep, that's
right. And Rena says, it's me with poison at the entrance.
Oh, no.
So they both get the penalty, and it's a very simple one once again.
Yeah, Mion just placed her shopping list on them. I don't distrust these people.
Keiichi has lurid fantasies about Mion sending them to buy condoms or something.
And it's Fortunately, not that. Just literally just like veggies and stuff like that.
And he is just so annoyed because the paranoia in his head about this game turned out to be nothing.
Yeah, absolutely nothing. Nothing weird is going on. Nothing at all. So chapter 8 begins with Keiichi just resting in class. He didn't get much sleep because he was just kind of freaked the fuck out. And we'll kind of see, like, in the tips, there's kind of a reason why he was freaked the fuck out.
Oh, there's a lot of reasons. Like I said, he claims the others he was watching TV. Mion asked if he was watching porn, I presume on scrambled channels. But anyways.
Oh, no. But yeah, so as he rests, he overhears Rena and Mion talking about someone vanishing on the night of Watanagashi.
Just for context, he kind of gets angry with Satoko, and they get annoyed that he's napping during lunch, but he just naps, and before he falls asleep, he starts overhearing things.
And that's actually kind of forces him to stay awake, because he feels awkward about the idea of suddenly breaking into the serious sounding conversation. So he just kind of pretends to sleep, but he listens.
Yeah, and as he listens, the two start to wonder if it's because of the curse or if it's an Oni Kakushi. We will talk about that term a bit later, but
if it's a chapter title.
With the original Japanese, hearing that particular word would be ominous as fuck. This isn't a case of like a common word having a hard to translate thing in Japanese. No, this is a neologism specifically made for this work.
Yeah, like it's literally switching like taken by a spirit to taken from a demon in sort of like a folklorish sense. So it kind of.
We'll talk a bit more about what it means later. But after class, Mion announces club is canceled. She has to help her uncle with something today. So Keiichi, who wants to get revenge for the previous day, tries to get the others to play deduction, and no one is in.
Yeah, like she really wants him and Rena's plan to work after all. He thinks he can make it work.
So everyone else sort of bails on him, and he just starts going through the cards a bit. And he sees six names rather than five. The five members of the club and a Satoshi that he does not know.
And Keiichi immediately, he kind of tries to be cagey about it. Well, but he ends up asking Rena about this Satoshi.
I don't know if he's trying to be cagey about it. He's just like, hey,
who's this?
Did Satoshi transfer or something? And she's just like, I don't know.
Like, no, I just must have missed him because I transferred after.
Yeah. Mm. It's like, I don't know. But I don't know what you're talking about. No Satoshi here.
But it's also a pretty fast spin around. Like, he tries to poke her, like, how quick did you come? When did you come to Hinamizawa? And she like kind of says like, oh, it was the same as yours. What was yours like? And she just gets him talking almost immediately.
Yeah. So they keep going. The conversation continues. And then Rena starts acting strange on the way home.
Yeah. Like Keiichi starts pushing her a little bit harder on some questions.
Keiichi asks Rena if she's been keeping something from him. And she starts acting pretty strange.
Yep. Her eyes seem to glass over. And she starts screaming at him.
After going very cold tone, like he describes it as a cold, sharp glare. Like it pierces through.
As an aside, when I first experienced this, and especially in the original sprites, I really love the effect that they do because the eyes are so big in the original sprites. They're such a major feature of Rena. It's a very small change. It almost looks kind of like he negatives out the saturation of the eyes, but it's such a large change. It recasts the entire face and it kind of sets off all of your mental flags for uncanniness. You just feel something is wrong.
And we'll revisit this in a second. So this conversation is deeply unsettling, has Keiichi in the back foot. And then very suddenly, she just goes back to normal. And she leaves and he just kind of just freezes up completely. Mm-hmm. I just want to stop in a second. He says, like, that was just someone who looked like Rena. So I could probably talk to Rena tomorrow because that would be actually Rena. He is just full on in justification.
Yeah.
I kind of been using a repeated joke here. I love the joke that, like, in creepypastas, especially video game based ones, they kind of have a bad sense of how to ratchet up tension, so they'll have something super crazy happen and the character said, I just assume I imagined it, went back to sleep.
Is he a creepypasta protagonist then?
Very much so at the moment. I mean, there's much more justification for his, but it was just kind of this very amusing, I'm going to assume everything's normal sense.
Yep.
But yeah, he immediately in the narration gets this sense that this isn't the Rena he knows, so it must be somebody else.
But because it's someone else, she'll be normal again. Like, that's, yeah, that's interesting.
That night, Keiichi is pretty freaked the fuck out, and he gets a phone call from the bookstore, who is really just Oichi.
Yeah, his parents don't question why the bookstore might be calling him at 8 p.m.
He ordered a book. I don't know. Your book's in. Come get it tomorrow.
Keiichi, what kind of books are you ordering?
Not porn.
Yes, I know. That's the last five you got all said that on the cover.
Yes. So he tells Oishi that he heard this term Onikakushi and asks, what's that about?
And they talk about how it's the, like I said, the comparison to the old term. And then Keiichi just starts talking about how there's technically each year the curse, while one person has died, there's another that, while assumed died, is never found.
We also learned that the person that disappeared in the fourth year was Satoshi Hojo.
Dun, dun, dun.
So yep. That ties into both the Satoshi that we learned before, and it ties us to another one of our classmates with Satoko.
Yep.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this all stuff, you know, kind of had me on the edge of my seat. I was very much, the narration is good at getting you into Keiichi's mindset here.
Like Oishi, Keiichi talk about Rena, like he says that Rena seems strange. He won't go into details because he can't quite process it. And Oishi's like, well, no, I'm telling you to watch her because maybe she doesn't end up the next victim. It's still Oishi being shady and pushy, but. Mm-hmm.
But as they wrap up the conversation, and Oishi promises to do some more research, Keiichi's dad comes up the stairs with cookies and black tea for two.
And acting kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, Keiichi, you sly dog, you have a girl in your room? That's
it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like, it's just like, wait, where's Rena?
Yeah.
And, did she go already?
Yeah, and Keiichi is, like, mystified. He has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, Rena came upstairs. I mean, and I didn't pass her, so I came up, so I assumed she was still here. Didn't she come into your room after I told her where you were?
And...
That was an hour ago.
Yep.
And like this whole thing is just so comical in some way because of Keiichi's dad, the way he's behaving. But it kind of just slips in just how horrifying this actually is to Keiichi.
Because,
well, like, wait, while I was talking about all this dark stuff, Oishi, was Rena outside my door? And we get like a CG vision, I get imagination spot of it.
Mm-hmm. In the console version, you get a CG mental image of Rena outside the door just watching him.
Yeah, it's just like the eye peeking through the sliding door.
Well, it's just the whole face because the door is kind of half open. It's doing kind of a cutaway into the porch. But yeah, gotcha. Keiichi like staring down at the phone and just blank-eyed Rena straight behind.
The way I always imagine it was just like her like right up against it and you just see the eye.
So, where'd she go?
And what did she hear? And why didn't she say anything?
Yep. Yeah, because Keiichi just imagines that she was there the whole time and she heard everything.
Chapter 9, Keiichi decides to stay home and not go to school. I think this is a justifiable decision right here.
Yes. But he does genuinely feel bad, but presumably because he's having a hard time sleeping. He's tired, he's dizzy, has a headache. Maybe like, even is getting a bit of something because he's so freaked out.
Yep. So his mom sends him to the clinic while they go to the city for his dad's work. What are they going to the city for?
I mean, as I recall, Keiichi's like, he just does it every so often. I don't know. He has no idea what for.
Yeah.
He must have some kind of contract or agreement with, like, you know, magazines or art dealers or something in Tokyo.
I am not convinced of this.
Yeah. But I want to break in here and say I'm still... Just to mention for the first time and try my experience, get my housemate to watch. We've only read a little bit, but he almost immediately assumed Keiichi's dad was a house painter based on the original narration.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But it's like, whoa, he paints houses? How does he afford a house this big? Because he already noticed the house seems big. It's like, oh, no, I'm pretty sure he means he's an artist. And he goes on to say, I imagine it's a really relaxing job. I was kind of laughing my friend and just imagining, yeah, those rollers are just so calm and soothing.
Oh, no. Anyway. We go to a clinic called the Irie Clinic, and Keiichi is diagnosed with a simple cold and he is given a shot and 3 days worth of medicine. As he leaves, he overhears two elderly people discussing Onikakushi, which, like, this is now starting just like,
yeah,
he's overhearing shit all the time.
But then they go, immediately say, "Nah, it's probably not that. I mean, she eloped with that guy she was seeing."
Yep,
that cameraman. Like,
clearly, yeah, they're saying like the nurse Takano is gone, and they're sad about it. It's like, oh, that must have been her.
Uh huh.
Yep. We finally get her name.
Mm hmm.
Well, her family name.
Yeah.
Yep.
Keiichi heads back, and a car goes by honking at him. Oishi is ready for more talking.
Oishi takes him over to Okinomiya to a very questionable diner in the town.
Yeah, by the way, he's picked up a teenager whose parents aren't home and just drove him out of the town.
Yep, and he takes him to Hooters, basically. he literally just has this leering laugh as he's like, "Aren't the waitresses here cute?" And Keiichi's just like, "Dude, what the fuck?"
You're leering. Am I really?
Yeah.
God damn it.
He literally says, "Yeah, this place is more about the waitresses than the food."
They describe him as peculiarly dressed. Let's say it peculiarly. Why can't I say that word?
Peculiar. That is a hard word.
Peculiarly.
They're weird. They're weird dressed.
Yes. After they eat, Oishi gets down to a business explaining history of the Hinamizawa and its folklore. We will get into that a lot later because I think it's like much more useful to like just get into it as a scene.
Yeah. We're going to be doing scenes where also it's going to be good just to discuss all of Oishi's thoughts and the evidence.
But the big kicker here is that he goes on to basically connect all of Keiichi's friends to the string of murders and disappearances.
Yep.
And while that's already really shady and unpleasant, I get really mad at what he does next.
His even dredged up Rena's history at her last school and how she's actually originally from Hinamizawa to begin with.
Yeah. Like this, he literally describes, although she's not connected to anything, she has violent history and psychologically diagnosed problems. That's very cold.
Part of the reason that Oishi is basically saying all this is confidential is because it's probably very illegal for Oishi to go digging up this information, telling anyone.
And when we find out later exactly the ways he pushed and prodded, and a lot of them are not very cool.
I'm not going to say it's good what he did. I'm just going to say, technically, what he did is not illegal. But we're going to get into that in the cop tactics section.
Yeah. Like Oishi, as they're driving back, Oishi just starts talking about how much pressure's on to solve the case. And Keiichi gets mad. He's like, "I'm just the bait for this guy, aren't I?"
Yep.
And by the way, I just stop here for this, the most warped joke. Keiichi's narration is getting more and more frantic, but he just starts thinking about the road they're on. I never paid attention to road. It's like it was trying to tell me something. Ba-dump. That big jolt was the difference from elevation of the road when it changed to cement to dirt. I was certain I heard Tomotaki scream. I'm just imagining, stop running him over then. For the love of God, use room to go around or call the doctor hospital. Jump, jump. Oh, we better back up.
Oh, no. That night, Mion calls to check in on Keiichi. And when she learns that he's awake, she's like, "Hey, I'm going to bring Rena. Let's check up on you." What a nice friend.
No, you don't need to do that. I'm good.
But they do. They arrive and they bring a get well gift of Ohagi. It is called Mochi in the manga gamer translation because Mochi is probably easier to understand than Ohagi for most people, but they're the same thing kind of. Ohagi is mochi made with red bean paste.
Ohagi is a type of mochi.
Yeah, it's a specifically like a particular kind, the way you make it. Yeah.
It's kind of like a very desserty one. It's pretty sweet from what I understand.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can hear the voices saying Ohagi if you listen to the right spots, of course.
Yeah, yeah. One of them was made by Rena. Keiichi has to figure out which one it was. That's his club homework.
Yeah, the rest are made by Mion's grandmother, apparently.
Yep.
But before the two girls end up going, Mion and Rena start to end up acting pretty strange. And Mion asks Keiichi, "What did you have for lunch?"
Yeah, it's like both their eyes harden again like before. And Mion is definitely being more haughty and confident about it. It's like, I know everything.
Yep. Yeah, this is the first time we see Mion with the strange eyes. Before, it was just Rena.
You were seen with a old man, weren't you?
An austere older man.
Yep.
You got pretty worked up.
Yeah. Seems like you got pretty excited. What were you talking about?
Yeah.
What were you talking about, Keiichi?
And then they just laugh and both leave. But then just before a door shuts, pops open again. Like Mion's eye is right there.
You better come to class tomorrow, Keiichi.
I would hate it if you didn't come to class tomorrow.
Yep.
This is the CG more like Matt imagines, because it's literally just an eye outside a chained door open a crack.
Yep.
It kind of ends with Mion telling Keiichi, there's nothing this old man doesn't know.
Now Keiichi's worried. Like, are they warning me? Are they saying, are they telling me that I'm under threat? Are they helping me? He immediately tries to flush it out of his head again, which is pretty funny.
No. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
But he hits himself.
Yeah. Let's fucking get to the Ohage. So he opens up the little carrot package, sees five Ohage, each with a little letter next to them, A through E. He sees one that looks a little different than the others, like it's a lot more carefully made, is what he observes. And he's like, okay, that one's probably Rena's.
Yeah, I'll try one of the normal ones first. That's good.
Yeah, seems fine. Takes a bite out of Rena's. And when he does...
So I wonder if they added something, and he feels something in his mouth.
Yep, he finds a sewing needle inside it.
This is nearly a mental breakdown. Like, he can't register truth. It's like, it looks like a sewing needle, but that couldn't be right. He even feels, has the eye through it.
Yep.
Yeah. Wait, what am I mean look like one?
Yep.
Yeah.
He just chucks it at the wall, like, and then just fucking runs upstairs to, like,
yeah, flings all of them against the wall. Like, yeah, just, yeah. He makes a five-sided of a die on it almost.
Yeah.
So, good, yeah. Bad. That is all we're going to get through today in terms of the summary.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot to talk about.
What a great place to end on, guys. Fucking hell.
Yeah, he's thinking, it's like, so you're saying I'm an enemy, but I won't let myself be killed. And he is just completely starting to spiral.
I mean, he's having an understandable reaction from what's happening to him in some ways, but he is definitely feeling the stress and having a mental breakdown.
We're in the discussion section now.
Lots to talk about and a lot of things to mention.
Only one new character this time, Kura Udo Oishi.
Isn't it Kurando?
No, Kura Udo.
Is he a soldier first class?
I mean, that is kind of what the name is alluding to, yes.
He's also delicious.
I mean,
Big, I know it's Rocket, a meme. They call his,
Big
they
Rock call is what Oishi. His name means, I think.
Yeah,
but, yes,
but it's, you know, but it's, it sounds like.
Yeah, it has the long O, yeah.
We need one more I to be delicious, though.
Yep.
I just know Mr. Delicious was a common meme name for him.
Oh, well, yes. So, what do we think about the man whose air conditioning brings all the kids to the car?
Oof. That's terrible. So,
I immediately dislike him.
First impressions. Oh, yeah. We are not supposed to like this guy out the gate. And this is...
I'm not even going to get into cop politics. I'm going to focus on this guy specifically.
Yeah.
He comes off as a sleazeball right away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his voice actor just has this incredible amount of just like slime that he puts over every single word that he speaks.
It's just incredibly smug drawl. And I've been trying, like, when we're having versions of him, I've been trying to imitate it. I'm going to keep working on that.
Yeah, he is honestly one of the most impactful characters, just like in this first chapter of Higurashi.
Well, he's also extremely important to making the story move along, because essentially he comes along and it's really our first indication. It's really the start of everything going to hell.
Yep.
It's like, I just want to talk about his visuals. Pretty funny too. It's like, he's this guy in his 50s, maybe 60s with silvered hair. He's quite heavy in the original arts, you know, in its simple style. For some reason, he had very kind eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The joke, like, his eyes are big and shiny looking. So on a male character, it looks extra funny.
His Steam/remake sprite is fucking jacked and it's kind of terrifying.
Yeah, well, he's still got the big guy, but like you see, like, yeah, he's got a visible chest and that. But honestly, his face is ridiculous. He's got weird squared nose and eyes. I think he looks like a Muppet in the Steam sprites.
A sumo wrestler Muppet is what I'd say.
We do get a bit of idea that he's had his stint as kind of a crooked cop or at least a questionable cop. And so he's done the rough and tumble thing. And
and the violence thing, quite clearly.
Yeah. He's also close to retirement. He's been at this job for a very long time. And it's like, we don't get a sense yet of just how big this case is to him in this first impression. But like, he is a man on a mission.
There's still some more to talk about him, but the tips actually cover a lot of it. So we can offload some of it there. But
yep.
He's very clear. Like, it's rather clear he's acting pretty independently.
Yep.
Yeah. I think we can talk about a lot of the shitty things he does in the we're going to talk about cop tactics.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Music.
We got some new music to discuss. And as the show gets a little less cute, the music gets a little less happy.
Yep. So let's first talk about the scary theme of this chapter called Insanity.
This one's easy. A good theme to set the mood for it because it. I use this term a lot ever since we watched ReZero, but I like the term. It's a very good my brain is squirming kind of theme.
I like Insanity a lot more than the original theme that they played, like in the original thing, Demonic Institute. Like, this one is, like, suitably creepy. Demonic Institute is almost cartoony in how creepy it is.
It's kind of loud, too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Like, this has this sort of, like, low...
This is rumbling, like, yeah. Low thunder in the distance.
Like, it's a lot more in-your-face creepy than the spooky theme or Corridor to Insanity, but this is still just, like, a building
this is,
dread.
This is tension.
This is dread. Yeah. Yeah.
Dread and tension, both of those.
Mm-hmm. That's Insanity. Now let's move on to a sad theme. This theme is... So both of these themes, really all the themes that have a name that we know, are pulled from later in the series. And so Iru is a theme that I believe gets played a lot in chapters 5 and 6 or in the original version.
Yeah, this one just is like... kind of melancholy in a lot of ways.
Yeah, this is like the good, all the good days are done.
Like there's, it's full of sadness. It's full of like, it's peaceful, but in a wistful way at best.
Yeah. And I would say like the key thing about Iru that works for me is it is longing for things to return to normal.
We start seeing quite a bit of that as we go on
in
Onikakushi here.
Yeah.
Where Keiichi actually finds himself bargaining to nobody in particular, to a higher power, begging for him to have been mistaken.
Yes.
And for things to go back to normal.
So I'm just taking a moment to listen to this song. It's really good. This is my favorite song in this whole... This is my favorite song in Onikakushi. Bar none. I forget what Silence originally sounds like. That's the original theme, but it's another, like, more sad theme.
This is one of those die piano pieces, right?
Yes, I'm pretty damn sure this is a die piano piece that got ported from the later games into this early one.
Makes sense.
It definitely has the whole, oh gosh, die is feeling sad and making a piano piece theme to going on. Which is most die piano pieces, let's be clear. All right, let's talk about club activities, folks.
It's a pretty simple, as we actually describe the main stuff of the game. So the way the clue works is basically you look at your cards and then you try to guess, like make a guess of who the culprit is. And everyone can speak up if they have one or more of the cards that you guessed.
It's a great little game to introduce right at this point in the story, because it is the time where we're starting to suspect our friends of being more than they seem.
And then it gets less funny when it's Rena with the poison in the entrance.
Yep. yeah, they're...
So, Keiichi, which one is Rena's?
Oh, right, that's right, Ohagi.
Technically, Ohagi. That's a club activity.
It's a much tougher one. The penalties are getting a lot harder. The penalty for this one is a permanent loss to your sanity score.
It's a good one... Brutal club game, I gotta say.
Don't swallow the needle.
Yeah, just don't do that, buddy. Hang in there. Let's move on to something cute.
Rena's Cute Corner.
Well, for all that in, we really don't have much to add this time around. Rena was excited to see Satoko being tormented by Keiichi. This is a theme and a worrying one.
Yeah. why is bullying Satoko fun and cute again? I don't like that.
I think she just finds Satoko to have a very cute, like, crying face, which is worrying on its own, but technically not deliberately malicious.
So Keiichi, in his faking being asleep, Rena finds that cute, too.
Well, Satoko is tying his shoelaces together, and I believe also other things, so he falls flat on his face anyways.
Yeah, of course.
It's conversation.
Yeah. But we don't see any sightings of cute mode Rena this week, so we don't get any more information about what she can do.
Yep. We do see a lot of creepy eyes mode Rena, though.
Yeah, and she doesn't seem to find anything cute.
Nope, not at all. Before we get into that, though, let's talk about Oishi's cop tactics real quick. All we have in our notes right here is just, yeah, that. But I do think it's kind of worth talking about things that are like, I don't know how it is in the Japanese police force, but at the very least, everything Oishi does is technically available pathway to cops in America. Yeah. Lying to kids.
I only hear like the bad tones about, like, you always hear things like how the cops go for a brutal confession racket where they will lean on a perpetrator to confess and have a very high rate for it. Mm-hmm. But this is just sort of the word of mouth things you hear. I really couldn't say how accurate or realistic it is, but I do have bad feelings.
Yeah. And Oishi, you get the impression that Ryukishi has opinions on police based on how he writes Oishi and his work.
I mean, throughout this, I said Oishi is coming within an inch of gaslighting Keiichi. You get the feeling he actually wants to, like, he thinks he's doing the right thing and this kid will help him. But, like, he insinuates things about the kid's friends to make him ask and act like it's being pulled out of him. He isolates him. He lies to his parents about who he is and speaks to them without their permission.
Keiichi ends up saying he's very good at conversation, which is kind of a backhanded Japanese way of saying this guy's manipulating me.
Well, he tends to say it's him saying semi-innocent sounding phrases, which clearly have double meanings. It's what tends to drag that thought out of Keiichi. Like, talking outside is always kind of difficult or something like that. So,
mm-hmm.
He wants to go somewhere.
There's one thing where Oishi is inviting Keiichi into his car for the second time to go to Okinomiya, where it's like, oh, I get it. He's saying that he's trying to discuss something that he wouldn't want to say inside of Hinamizawa, so we're going to go to Okinomiya.
Yep. I do think it's also just kind of worth noting, most of the time in a mystery story, the police are generally, like, a bit bumbling, but never portrayed quite like this. You get a police detective who is, like, not the main detective. The main detective is always the weird, quirky guy with the weird hair or something like that. I'm specifically thinking of Kosuke Kindaichi with that description. But, like, a police detective is still, like, someone you can kind of trust, even if he's not the one who's going to be solving the case. That is not the case here.
Yeah.
Well, so the thing is that I get the impression here that Oishi is actually genuinely concerned with solving this series of murders and disappearances. That is his primary motivation.
Yes.
The question is whether he actually has Keiichi's best interests in mind or not, or whether he's just using Keiichi as bait.
Yep, that is a very good question. And what does he care more about, the truth of this case or helping the community get through this and solve the problem and bring people to justice? Which is what he actually cares about. And who is he going to hurt to get to that truth?
Yeah.
And so a lot of what Oishi does is that he says a lot of things to try to steer Keiichi in a direction where he's going to be more on his side. Mm-hmm. Because he's trying to say, basically, you don't believe in curses, right? Well,
by the way, here's a 5-paragraph story my mother told me about how the village was full of demons that ate people.
We'll yes. get to that in a bit. Now we're getting to the point where we get to the scenes. And so with each of these scenes, I think we kind of
want to... Well, there's the eyes to talk about first.
Yeah, let's talk about the eyes real quick. We alluded to them a bit before, how they have this interesting glassy appearance. They are a bit more snake-like, cat-like, I guess, in the remake and console versions. The console version does it well, but...
The remake overdoes it. Not only does it add that snake-like look, it kind of gives her... Like, in the original, their expressions actually change very little. They become a little bit colder, but they also have normal smiles. The remake gives them, like, this like lined look to their eyes, like they're drawn, and just this evil smirk, which I think is just very much aggressive.
Yeah, everything about the remake sprites just don't work for this, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I said, but basically both Mion and Rena happen to have blue or bluish eyes. So what happens is they start drawing the pupil normal. They turn into a darker shade of blue and make it appear very small within this, like this pale blue ring.
Yeah, that's the console version, right?
I would say the original version is similar to that. It glassed over the eyes to a pale blue as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. But they don't really change the expression except for the eyes at all.
Well, they do add like more flat expressions and a couple angry expressions, but it's not just default to that.
Well, yeah, there are a few expressions that only seem to show up when they have the scary eyes.
And so on that note, then we have a scene that involves the scary eyes to portray here.
Yeah. Keiichi and Rena as they went home, and Keiichi asked a few too many questions.
I will be portraying Rena in this. Jared will be portraying Keiichi.
Hey, Rena, is there something that everyone is keeping from me?
Huh? No, not at all.
You're lying, aren't you? Rena suddenly stopped. Her expression was cold and intense.
What do you mean by that, Keiichi-kun?
Her tone was still the same cheery and lighthearted one as before. You are, aren't you? Keeping something from me? After understanding what I meant, her expression grew even more intense. Seeing that face, I regretted saying something so rash. But she came back at me in a way I didn't expect.
Well then, Keiichi, aren't you keeping something from us?
Huh? Her tone didn't change, but it was the first time I'd seen this expression from Rena. With how her gaze pierced through me, I couldn't believe this was the same Rena.
Aren't you? Lies or secrets? Aren't you?
You are. Secrets. She didn't actually say that part, but she looked as if she did. The incident with Tomotaki-san, and how I felt alienated from the group. Even without having to think about it, there were things I knew I felt guilty about. But I didn't tell everyone about what happened with Tomotaki-san, to be considerate. I was keeping it a secret just the same way they didn't tell me about Oyashiro-sama. Then, aren't we even? No, I'm not. No lies, nor secrets.
Liar.
Her answer was instant and shook me. Rena stared as if it burrowing through me, watching me like a hawk. Why would you say I'm lying?
Didn't you say that you were called into the teacher's room yesterday during the club meeting, Keiichi-kun? I know, you didn't go into the teacher's room.
I swallowed hard. It clearly wasn't a bluff. She knew what happened.
The teacher said you had a guest, didn't she? But you didn't talk at the entrance. You talked inside of the car near the school gate. With some man we don't know.
Rena knew everything. She knew that I was called up by Oishi-san, and that I heard about the incident with Tomotaki-san as well. Did she know all of it?
Exactly who was that man?
I don't know him.
Why did someone you don't know have business with you?
I want to know that myself.
Then what did you talk about?
It has nothing to do with you guys. It was a lie.
Lies!
Rena's scream echoed through the trees, sending frightened birds into the air. I couldn't exhale the deep breath I had just taken. No. It was like I wasn't allowed to exhale. It was here I first realized the person in front of me, she wasn't Rena Ryugu. Then, who was it that was standing before me now? Who had assumed Rena Ryugu's appearance? I had held my breath for so long, I could feel myself suffocating.
Right?
Then she made a facial expression that Rena normally might have made. It didn't matter that was Rena's usual smile. It chilled me to the bone. She drew closer to me. I felt her breath against my face. It wasn't the least bit exciting. Whoever this was with Rena's face was going to chew my nose right off. I cowered as I imagined that. Then, she smirked as if she was able to see right through me.
We also have secrets. just like how Keiji-kun has secrets.
It was Rena's usual smile, but her eyes were still like that of a hawk's. Bringing her face close enough to mine to almost bump into my nose, she kindly persuaded me. I couldn't nod or shake my head. This person standing in front of me, this person looked like Rena, frightened me to my core. I was terrified knowing that she could hear the sound of me swallowing nervously. After what felt like an eternity, after a long, empty silence, she finally spoke.
Let's go. It's getting chilly.
It was Rena again.
That scene, there's no way we weren't going to get out of this without doing that scene. You realize yeah, that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you want to talk about...
It's the most infamous scene.
It is. I would call this the most iconic scene in all of Higurashi. At least of all Higurashi Chapter 1.
Yes. We obviously didn't force the Japanese in, but everyone who knows Higurashi knows about Usada.
Yep.
Yep.
I will say that every version of this that I encountered does nail it.
Even the original anime, it's recognizable and clear.
Mm-hmm. That being said, I do think the original anime kind of rushes through it a bit, but it's still like that one line, the lies line, is always, always delivered properly and done well.
Yeah, in the various versions I've seen, it always, Rena sounds very accusatory and very manic at that particular moment.
Like, the CGs go really over top of it. They have a close-up Rena who goes from creepy face to scary face, but when she shouts that line, it flashes lies on the screen in sort of a handwritten script.
Yeah. It's a interesting effect in the console version, we'll say. It might be a bit overdone, but I understand why they do it, because it's expected to do it.
It actually made me genuinely scared of Rena here.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was really surprised at how effective it was. Like, it's an interesting effect because with the visual novel, I was really attached to these characters by now, and I didn't want to believe anything bad about them. Mm-hmm. But after this, I was having trouble really viewing Rena in the same way
mm-hmm.
before.
Oh, yeah. It will color your perception of Rena for the rest of this chapter, for sure. Yeah. Like, everything about her now is just kind of like,
and Keiichi is just so completely broken by this. He almost immediately assumes, like, this can't be Rena. And as we said earlier, he starts trying to memory hole and say, well, I guess I'll just see normal Rena tomorrow and it won't be this Rena ever again.
Yep.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about this is that it's kind of the start of this spiral here. But the author is really good at making you care about these characters and at the same time be absolutely paranoid and terrified of everything that they could possibly do.
So let's talk about the Legends of the Village and use that as a sort of a bridge to the next scene we wanted to do.
Sadly, it's not Legends of the Hidden Temple. No giant stone face, just Oishi.
No Shrine of the Silver Monkey, no.
No, just Shrine of Oyashiro-sama, of course.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about Onikakushi. The term literally would mean demoned away or
hidden away by a demon.
Yeah.
Is the most literal version.
Now, Kamikakushi is most commonly localized as Spirited Away, thanks to the Hayao Miyazaki film Spirited Away, which is called Kamikakushi in Japanese, as I recall, correct? Yep.
Like Sen no Chihiro no Kamikakushi, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. The village is a place where demons reside, and Onikakushi is when the demons snatch people up.
Yeah, like they go on about some, like this story about how the village is a village of Tengu or sage-like demons that could do amazing things but would consume people.
Yeah, and the first place Keiichi hears this word is from his friends talking about it while he's pretending to be asleep. But specifically, they say something very interesting, that if it's one of Oyashiro-sama's, there must have been an Onikakushi as well.
I don't think we get a whole lot about Oyashiro-sama in this arc, correct?
No. Not really.
That's what next arc is. So,
but there's the original name of the village and the marsh still holds of Onigafuchi.
Onigafuchi, the ogre's abyss.
I mean, ogre's kind of just being a transliteration or a cultural translation of oni, which still means a specific thing.
Yeah, oni is a very specific kind of Japanese monster that most like you could like think of as like an ogre, a big strong person, but like the cartoony image of an oni I always get is thanks to a lot of other like kids cartoons and things like that from Japan, where you have the tiger loincloth, the big club, the single horn, or maybe two horns.
Usually a blue and red one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, blue oni, red oni. There's a whole Japanese mythology based around the idea of the oni. And so the oni's abyss is just the idea of, hey, that marsh back there is a portal to hell. Don't go there.
They talk about the marsh is bottomless, how people could be lost there and never found. And we think mm-hmm. that a couple have been.
So. Yeah, yeah. Marshes like that do exist in the real world.
Bogs can be scary.
Yeah. You can see how that would be a source of a lot of religious...
of superstition. It could be a focal point of superstition.
Cultural folklore and superstition, yeah. They connect it to the demons that the village is, like, treats as its heritage.
He mentions of a legend of that there was basically a hunting activity that the demons would do. That's not the same thing as the Onikakushi, but it's just like, you know, there was the whole thing with... if
when the demons hunt, the people look away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the people look away. You're not supposed to acknowledge that it happened.
Yeah.
You're just supposed to ignore it, or else they might come for you and your family next.
Right.
Which, but with Keiichi, very easily, but we should imagine a conspiracy that other people will just avoid.
Mm-hmm. And I think for that, we probably want to get to
our second voice scene.
So for this one, I'm going to be taking over Keiichi so that Jared does not have to do both Oishi and Keiichi.
And so that you get some voice stuff as well.
Also, I might as well be doing hand puppets with myself, and I am not a ventriloquist, so...
Yeah, like, I think it makes a lot of sense for us to pass around the main character's voice, because the main character is the one who talks to everyone.
Yep.
All right, let's go.
Last year, I had a nagging feeling when Satoshi-kun disappeared.
Oishi-san muttered as he watched the milk swirl around in his coffee.
So those friends of Satoshi-san, meaning your group of friends, my Barra-san, I had a bit, really just a little bit, okay, of background checking done on them.
If Oishi-san said this to me before, I would have been furious, since he told me earlier not to suspect my friends. But as I was now, I couldn't.
This might sound pretty stupid, my Barra-san. If you feel it's stupid, please say so. I'll just stop.
Oishi-san was wearing the most serious expression that I'd ever seen from him. It was as if he was telling me to prepare myself and listen. There were quite a few things I regretted hearing from Oishi-san, but none of them were as threatening as this. A little voice inside me was screaming like an alarm. Stop, Keiichi. This was probably the last one. I took a deep breath and silenced that voice. I would not run from the truth. Please. That was all I could utter. Oishi-san stared into my eyes silently for a few moments. After he was certain I was ready, he began.
The victim of the incident in the first year was the overseer. A few weeks prior, he had an altercation with Mion Sonozaki-san. Multiple altercations.
Oishi-san had said before that Mion had defied the dam project vehemently. Well, it wasn't hard to imagine if she got worked up.
In the second year, the married couple who supported the project died in that accident, right? They had a daughter. Her name is Satoko Hojo-san.
Huh? Satoko? Meaning Satoko? Oishi-san's look told me that my voice was too loud. I realized it as well, and I quickly quieted down.
The Shinto priest and his wife, who died in the third year. You see, their daughter is Rika Furude-san.
Rika-chan was...
The housewife who died in the fourth year, you know already, don't you? It was the step-aunt of Satoko Hojo-san. She was in her aunt and uncle's custody, as she had lost both of her parents in the accident. She lived in the victim's house.
I could tell my lips were getting dry. I didn't even have the wits to keep my mouth from hanging agape. I had thought it was nothing but a bizarre accident, one that I could easily distance myself from. But clicking and clacking, it had snuck all the way to my feet.
The one who disappeared the fourth year, by the way, he was Satoko-san's older brother.
Well, just... wait a second. It took everything I had to finally say that. I gulped down a glass of water and once again wiped my face with a napkin. Calm down, Keiichi Maibara. But Oichi-san was relentless. Instead of waiting for me to finish sorting out my feelings, he started speaking again. The last of the things I shouldn't have heard.
All of the victims seem to be connected to your group of friends.
That has to be just a coincidence.
Maibara-san, keep it down. Everyone's looking.
Mion, Satoko, Rika-chan. So what if they're all connected? You're telling me all of my friends... It couldn't be. It just couldn't be. Oh, Rena is different, isn't she? Rena isn't connected with the victims at all.
Rena Ryugu-san was living in a suburb of Ibaraki Prefecture up until last year. Well, it's true she hadn't directly met any of the victims.
He said it in a roundabout way. Is he saying she's also connected?
Actually, I looked into her. Before Ryugu-san moved away to Hinamizawa, she was suspended from school. It seems she went through her school building and broke all of the windows.
Rena did that? She broke all the windows at her school? That same silly Rena? I couldn't even imagine it.
She went to a neurologist, was diagnosed with dysautonomia. She was given weeks of counseling and medication.
I wonder if it was something like a nervous breakdown. I've heard that it happens to people who are really methodical or overly sensitive. Neither of those matched Rena's easygoing personality.
And in the counselor's medical report, he recorded all the conversations he had with Rena-san. It shows up, and quite a bit of that.
What did? I pressed forward carelessly. There couldn't be anything more for me to regret.
She mentioned the word Oyashiro-sama.
It felt like someone's stone-cold hand was caressing my back. Why? Why had Rena spoken of Oyashiro-sama before she even came to Hinamizawa?
Seems that the Oyashiro-sama she spoke of was like a ghost, appearing in her house every night, standing over her pillow, looking down at her.
My mind froze. I couldn't process what I was being told.
While after that, she moved to Hinamizawa. That's right. She's not an outsider.
Huh?
According to the residency register, the Ryuga family used to reside in Hinamizawa. Rena-san moved to Ibaraki right after she finished elementary school.
My mind went completely blank. It was similar to the static you'd see on a blank TV channel. My ears began ringing as I lost all sense of comprehension.
Maibara-san, are you all right? Shall we stop?
Those words brought me back. I couldn't let it end here. Now I understand, Rena, then. How was the last victim, Tomitake-san? Who was he connected with? Irritated, I let out one final reprisal.
All of them? Have you forgotten, Maibara-san? Didn't you all spend the night of the festival together quite merrily? Quite a few of the officers saw you enjoying yourselves.
Now, there was nothing I could respond with. I fell silent as my brain turned to mush.
Nicely done.
But yeah, he just fills Keiichi's head with fear in this and just almost just sends him on his merry way a second later.
Boy, I sure would not like people digging up what happened to me in my school life because I was bullied to shit and the school blamed me for it.
Oh, yeah. I was a little bit luckier, but I went through a lot of youth counseling, mostly just due to my inability to relate to people, like social therapy, occupational therapy, minor physical therapy.
Yeah.
A lot of weird things like that. But I'd hate to have someone use that against me.
Yeah, yeah. That's the key thing. It's just like, it is the way that all this information is being framed to Keiichi that is, like, it's more or less designed to push him into a corner.
It's very brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that even with all this, I still believe that Oishi thinks he's more or less doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he's doing this to be mean. I think Oishi just seriously thinks that this is his last and best chance to solve this whole mystery.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And we've also already seen that Rena seems to be behaving strangely. Those more than she lets on. What does dysautonomia mean again?
Dysautonomia is it's a big class of neurological conditions where there's a problem with the automatic functions of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it kind of sounds like we aren't too interested in checking, so let's give it a blanket diagnosis.
There's a bit of that too, yeah.
Like a lot of psychology in the 80s, huh?
We'll actually see plenty of bunk psychology as Higurashi goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Both deliberately and sometimes not deliberately.
Yeah, the DSM-5 is not a monster's manual. I think with that, we're just going into the tips discussion.
Basically, every tip here, I believe, is a Oishi tip.
Yeah, basically, Oishi kind of takes over the tips, and it almost feels like in this part of the story, the thing's getting taken over by Oishi, and it's almost turning into a police procedural.
Mm-hmm.
It is adding details about the instance that Keiichi wouldn't learn, so you kind of see that as a valid evidence source.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the first one, the question of there are more than four perpetrators, and it's basically the police going over the details of Tomitake's death.
I believe it's mostly like Oishi and I think it's like a coroner, a medical examiner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We learn a little bit about Oishi's history here. At this point, he's probably like a senior detective, like way up in the ranks. But he's had his own stint as bad cop in the past. And that's probably a lot of his training has probably gone into.
Particularly distinct here. Like they mentioned that it's clear the plank never struck another person because there was no blood or anything on it. But
yeah, that's important to note. Like all the information that he gave Keiichi about the struggle, not necessarily accurate.
No, it's all true. He had a plank. He swung it around. He hit trees and he hit railings. But it's clear he never struck another person.
Right.
So either so he never was able.
But basically, the reasoning of more than four perpetrators is that Oishi kind of is like remembering his rough and tumble cop days. And's like, oh yeah, if I were to try to take down someone with as jacked as Tomitake. Without any harm to us, I'd need at least four people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really disturbing. It's like, I wonder how many it would take. And the other guy's like, you know better than anyone. Have you forgotten your bad cop days?
Yep.
And he starts talking about prey, taking a big prey in numbers. And that's just very twisted sounding.
So the next tip is called the search notice.
This is like a piece of paperwork.
Yeah. It's some details about the missing Tomitake and Takano. And what the police are looking for in their investigation on this.
Yeah, I can imagine this would be like Oishi's notebook where he was taking down details for his plans and what he wants to do next. But he talks about
it's kind of interesting because it talks about some of the steps that Oishi is doing that you might not have thought of, but is something that a detective would do.
He notes that that Tomitake's name doesn't appear to be his real name. He calls it a pen name and notes there's no residency with it. It's like, take the photo, add it to the Metro Police. Take the dental records to the Metro Police. Look for magazines for someone who might be using a pen name. It's very methodical about what I should do to confirm each of these things.
Well, yeah, and it specifically says follow up with the magazine companies about Tomitake being a freelancer because he is clearly thinking that Tomitake's real career and purpose for being in Hinamizawa isn't what he says it is.
It's more that he wants to see if it could be because he's like, maybe it's just a pen name he uses for photographs. Let's see if we can prove that. If not, we better go check some things. And then at the end, he wants cream puffs.
Yep. Of course.
And so there's a little bit about the woman, Mio Takano. It's the first time we actually see her name here in the tips. And it calls out that Tomitake's wallet is left behind, so it can't be a robbery. Finally, talks about Takano's disappearance, and it asks whether she got abducted or if she's a suspect.
Mm-hmm. Either way, an important person of interest. No motives, but maybe it was jealousy. I need to investigate this relationship, where she's from. I need to get to this unseen police. It's just very much like, here's all the things I better do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's reasonably effective, like with the types of the case as we see it now and the evidence sources we have, what he might be wanting.
It's clear that Oishi is, if nothing else, a competent cop. Mm-hmm. He's not bad at his job. He's doing all the things that he should. And in fact, he might be a little bit too pragmatic for Keiichi's taste here.
So let's go on to the next tip. The next tip is the notice from the police chief.
Clearly, this is an office memo, but this is like a notice to all officers, like alert that's been sent out.
Yeah, basically, it is a warning to not talk about the cases because it is causing problems with the villagers.
The long and short of it is basically that all of the Watanagashi murders and disappearances have been essentially classified. You are not to talk about them with anybody, and you are not to reopen them. You're not to do anything with them.
So Oishi is going a bit outside of his command in order to investigate this, is what we get from that.
It has a theoretical reason. They're saying that because it's so lurid, it's drawing in the media, and that's upsetting the villagers and hurting their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, in Chapter 9 now, we end up having two different tips. The first one is, what's a drug that makes you commit suicide? And, hoo boy, this one's full of bunk psychology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to say right now, there's a lot of talk of really strange, bad talk about suicidal ideation and so forth here. So, mm-hmm. I'll definitely want to be respectful here, because it's Oishi, and I don't know if it's the same medical examiner talking.
I think it's probably him, like, spitballing with Kuma-chan, his
subordinate.
Like, yeah, his main subordinate. A lot of these tips will be him spitballing with
This one might be a medical examiner again, though, but not mm-hmm. sure. It's not exactly clear, but it's not that important. Oishi is here, though.
Mm-hmm. Whoever he is, he's someone that Oishi thinks he can ask about. Like, could it be a drug that forces someone to kill themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but then the guy goes on to, I can't imagine this is truly realistic. He's saying that depressed people don't commit suicide because they're too unmotivated. That people who are in manic condition would be not wanting to. But as you're swinging from depressed to manic, suddenly you're wanting to and you have energy. And that sounds like bullshit.
Yeah,
it sounds bunk to me. Yeah. But at the same time, like, we got to be respectful here. And just this is pretty clearly like being presented as their thoughts on this as cops in the 80s, not any kind of like what a scientist in the 2000s might say, which is when this was being written.
One of the interesting things about this is that earlier they had actually talked about the idea of a drug being responsible with Keiichi. Keiichi actually invokes the idea of an untraceable drug that the cops can't detect.
Right.
And
he actually throws one out. So at one
point, he actually says succinyl something. And that's an actual drug that was like that for a long time called succinyl choline, which I thought was an interesting little touch.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of Ryukishi's experience might again be coming up to that.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And also, just got to keep in mind, like, bunk psychology still will stick around in a lot of organizations that, like, don't have the time or capacity to learn new things. So ideas like this can get passed around even if they're wrong and stay in the zeitgeist for a long time.
Mm.
I mean, we still have a lot of bunk psychology in the zeitgeist even today.
Oh, yeah. Then the last one for this section is called Threat. It is essentially we learn about the Sonozakis as a local political faction as well. Like,
it's like there's different members of the family have different roles in local politics.
Yep.
And Oishi and a superior are talking about it. The superior has brought him out to a dinner.
And it's also a very roundabout threat of, you know, hey, Oishi, if you keep doing this shit, your pension is at risk. You're not going to be able to retire in the way you want. Are you sure you want to be doing this?
Yeah. It's like there's the special retirement salary raise. Like, you get a two pay grade increase because you get like your final pay, your retirement pay is based on your increase. There's like, oh, you could lose that. Aren't you wanting to pay off your mom's home so that you can live with her quietly?
Mm. There's a bunch of stuff here where they mention that there's a prefectural assembly member Sonozaki and a city councilman Sonozaki, and both of them are throwing their weight around in order to exert this pressure to get Oishi to stop digging into this.
Yeah.
The line is explicitly, they're like Yakuza.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a lot. I think we've probably hit the end of where we can really go until the next episode. Good discussion all around this week. That was a lot of fun. And
it's
scary.
It's only going to get more fun to discuss this stuff.
Fun and scary. Yeah.
We've stared into the abyss. Next week, it might swallow us whole.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So until next time, I'm John.
I'm Jared.
And I'm Matt.
And remember, a good story is best enjoyed with friends. Thank you for listening to Backlog Dialogues. If you liked our show, please leave us a review that Rena would find cute. If you want to dig into our dark history, you can find our archives at www.backlogdialogues.com. Join the discussion on Twitter at Backlog Dialogues or on our Discord server. When They Cry and all associated properties are owned by 7th Expansion and Manga Gamer. Console versions by Intergram. Please support the official release. I have a listener request.
What?
So, Skeleton House, who runs the Skeleton House podcast, messaged me on Discord earlier saying, I need to go to an expert on this one. If someone with the name Alex had a nobody, what would you call the nobody? To which my response was, oh no, am I a Kingdom Hearts expert? Is that my brand now? And then I started giving him permutations. But I would like to hear your thoughts on this question, friends.
So,
Laxex.
Yeah, X-Lax.
No.
Okay, so...
You don't want to do the classic smooth move X-Lax?
It's not the 90s, man.
So this tells me something. Want to know what I did?
What?
My first instinct was, since the X is already pre-existent at the end, I'm going to move it to the front. And so I came up with Zexal or Zalxy. Something like that.
I said Zalex. Z-E-L-A-X. Yeah.
Is their name simply Alex, or are they Alexander or Alexandria?
That's a good question.
Or Alexander Hamilton?
No, none of that.
Thank you.
None of that, please. Ugh. That's so 2016.
I mean, I was just saying, when I'm next to Smooth Move X-Lax, you're criticizing me for only going back 8 years.
I know. I was...
So
I just couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Matt's the shit poster response. Jared takes it a bit more seriously, but he keeps the X at the end rather than at the start.
Put two X's in.
I know. Well, it's more just like, you did put it, the X, well, it. I'm just like amused by our instincts here.
I mean, there's also Exel.
My first instinct was actually to ask whether it was Alexander or just Alex, But I just, the X-Lax thing popped into my head and I couldn't resist being cringe.
I don't know if it's so much as cringe, it's just shitposty.
Yeah.
I feel like those are two different vibes. Anyway, thank you for the prompt, Skeleton House. Please listen to the Elk Skeleton Sax. House podcast. So what was that, Jared?
Elk-Sax.
Elk-Sax?
None of them sound, they all sound very awkward, don't they?
They do, yes. I'm pretty sure what Skeleton House was actually looking for was Matt's initial response. I'm pretty sure that's what he was actually looking for. But
if so, then we were set up.
We were set up, yep. Listen to the Skeleton House podcast. He has a lot of audio-only Let's Plays.
I am quite confident I never played Clue correctly. Or Mousetrap for that matter.
There's other ways to play Mousetrap?
Oh no! All we did was just set up the trap and run it over and over again. We didn't do anything.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's not playing Mousetrap. That's just putting together a Mousetrap.
And then we would know that. Then sometimes we would just roll the board and do nothing till we got to the end.
Wild.
No Porky Pig on this. Yeah. Strangely dressed.
Yes.